everybody, and welcome to F This Movie! F This Movie Fest 2 is over. Yay!
For just a second, I thought Mark was going to do the slow, sarcastic clap.
No, never.
I think he was.
Never.
My name is Patrick Bromley.
It never works.
And I'm here for F This Movie Fest 2. I'm here with Doug.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
I'm here with Erica.
Hi, guys.
I'm here with Mark On.
Good evening. Good evening.
I'm here with our friend Nas.
Hi.
And Jan B.
Why do you cry?
And JB.
We now consecrate the bond of obedience.
And for the first time ever on an F This Movie podcast, our newest contributor, Adam Risky.
Woo! You don't want to hear your voice.
This is what my voice sounds like.
Patrick, amending the last time ever on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, no. Oh,
sorry. You're burnt, Adam!
Thank you guys all for joining us. In case you didn't know, you can find our website at fthismovie.net, and we just celebrated F This Movie Fest 2, the world's only all-Twitter film festival. We watched 5 movies and talked about them on Twitter. Follow us at twitter.com/fthismovie. This year's theme was celebrating the films of 1991. So first we watched The Last Boy Scout, and then I've already forgotten.
Dark Crystal.
Dark Crystal was second. The Rocketeer was second. And then Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. And then New Jack City. And we ended with Terminator 2 Judgment Day. So I would love to kick off this special episode by asking everyone in the circle, highlight of the festival for you.
Should we all answer at the same time?
Yeah, well, that would be okay.
I thought Last Boy Scout was kind of late.
Did I hear a niner?
I said
like to go back to the day of my birth.
Douglas, what was your favorite movie in the festival line?
Dark Crystal has already been taken, so it's not that. My favorite movie in the... it's a tie.
Okay.
Can I do that? A tie?
I mean, yeah, it's a little bit pussy, but sure, go ahead.
You're the one who likes Nicole Kidman. I liked T2.
Yes.
I thought it was...
Judgment Day, are you talking about?
Spec T2-tacular. Judgment Night.
Nice.
I believe that's the...
Judgment Night.
And Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, because everyone all together, we know what we're...
Sorry, that was Evil Robot Doug. Adam Risky, what was your favorite movie of the fest?
I realized tonight that I think I like The Last Boy Scout more than Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
What? Controversial statement.
Heresy?
Real quick about Adam, last time on the podcast.
J-Bones, what was your favorite?
Well, this doesn't seem quite fair because there was a short subject tonight and we didn't announce it and we didn't tweet about it, but it was between Bill and Ted and New Jack City. You showed the short subject, JB Becomes a Man.
Yes.
But besides that, I'd have to say that my Blade Runner of this year was The Rocketeer.
Okay.
It's such a great movie
to
just watch. And it was almost ruined for me because halfway through
Of all the tweeting?
No,
you're
remember,
like, everybody stop it!
No, halfway through Rocketeer, Adam takes off his clothes. He's running around. He's waving it around. What the hell, man?
I look exactly like Station when I have my shirt off.
You know what? I take it back. You'll be on the podcast again.
One more time.
Podcast is a euphemism.
Jan B., what was your favorite movie?
You know what? I loved them all. I have to say, Last Boy Scout's the only one I haven't seen, and it was such a pleasant surprise that I'm just going to say that one was my favorite just for novelty.
All right.
And it was new to you. Yeah.
Mark On, favorite movie of the festival?
Out of the 5, I actually hadn't seen 3 of them.
Nice.
So I came to the right place, apparently.
Can you answer the question?
I'm going to answer the question. Just calm down.
I really like
The Rocketeer, actually.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
You should see it without tweeting through it sometime.
Okay.
So it makes a huge difference.
It's lovely to see Jennifer Connelly when she's a human being.
It is, right? 91 was
so
her peak.
I know. She's so just...
Some people on the Twitter were complaining about its pace.
I'm complaining too.
But I really like the pace of it. It's deliberately paced. It has a kind of an old-fashioned stately pace.
Yes.
I agree.
I think the pace becomes more obvious when you're trying to find things to write all the way through it, because it's like Blade Runner last year. It doesn't lend itself as well to constant tweets.
Plus, I thought part of it was people actually started to watch it and weren't just seeing it is an opportunity for runny nose humor.
Right.
I think we're saying the pace too often. It doesn't sound like a real word anymore. I think the pace of this is the pace. The pace, the pace, the pace.
Station. Naz, you were only here for Terminator 2. What was your favorite movie of the festival?
Terminator 2.
Good answer.
I'm so glad she didn't say one of the other ones.
Wait, I'm not mistaken. She said TMNT2, right?
Yeah.
Go Ninja, Go.
Yeah, it's the secret of the ooze.
Doug's going to show you the secret of the ooze.
No, oh, yeah. Never again.
And that will guarantee that you're on another podcast.
F this pants.
Bew, what was your favorite movie of the festival?
Probably Terminator 2, but... that's not my official answer. I'm going to say New Jack City because I think I want to go back to 1991.
We did.
Halfway through the fest, Adam walked outside. It was 1991.
Yeah.
And he came back into the basement, and the movie was on VHS.
Put money on the Minnesota Twins. They will win the World Series this year. Yes. The Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, when was their first championship?
Oh, they're going to beat the Lakers this summer. This Mike Jordan kid's going to make good.
I gotta say, my favorite movie today, not the best movie we watched, I think the one that I enjoyed the most was Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not what my favorite movie of the movies we watched.
No, but that's crazy enjoyable.
Yeah,
like
it was.
Everything that fun. Makes you have fun at the movies, that
right.
movie packs in. Somewhere.
And you just really appreciate, like, what a crazy movie
that is. You know what I really appreciate? How right. much you know what you're doing.
Thank you, Doug.
That was a theme.
Thank you.
Another thing, a lot of people...
Sorry, 91. It's 1991, everyone.
Patrick's doing a victory dance around the basement. Something that a lot of the Twitter people commented on was how great William Sadler's performance is and how once he establishes how funny he is, it's like then every scene he's in or every reaction shot he's in, he sets the bar. And he always hits it. He's very funny.
Yeah.
He also retweeted us a couple times on the Twitter. He retweeted. He responded. He was very generous in his tweets and responses.
Thank you, William Sadler.
This is only the second of this movie fest we've done, but already we had celebrities participating.
Yeah, Alex Winter.
Yes.
Yes, he's awesome too.
William Sadler and Vanessa Williams, not the singer / penthouse model.
The better one.
The one from New Jack City.
Time out. Yeah. You're saying the one that wasn't in Penthouse is the better one? Did she get it on with the chick?
I had to choose sides in the Rick Fox Vanessa Williams divorce, and Rick Fox was
you
my
went
boy.
Rick Fox.
I went Rick Fox. I know him.
He's the prettiest Laker.
Yeah, he certainly is. Oh, and thank you to Billy Campbell.
Oh yeah,
For retweeting about F this movie fest,
Billy
and
Dreamboat.
You're gonna make it tougher to watch enough because now I might have to root for you.
We've done close to 160 episodes and never brought up the movie enough. So thank you, sir.
Oh wait, I want to also thank Big Boob Bot for retweeting. I think Erica did
no,
you tweet?
It was Jan.
Jan B. tweeted out something about someone's rack. Someone's
it was
healthy.
About no, it was about it was a reference
Jones magazine.
Jones
magazine.
I'm gonna stick with
How
what I said before.
One?
You were upstairs for Last Boy Scout, being a parent.
Oh, taking
so
care
Jan
of the kids,
out,
so someone
what I'm saying
tweet.
Is it was apparent that you didn't want to watch Last Boy Scout.
Most of Jan's
a movie
tweets...
that loves women.
Did I miss a lot of boobs?
Just us. We're kind of boobs.
Oh.
We're
a lot
of
the
boobs.
Henchmen were boobs because they behaved in an idiotic fashion.
No, Halle Berry played a stripper who does not get naked.
Oh.
Another example of pornography.
But of course, at this movie fest is nothing without everyone on Twitter taking part. So thank you to everyone who kicked much ass during the fest. And now I'm going to read a bunch of names from people who have participated today. So follow all these people on Twitter. Ready, go. Tony Nelson, Alice Nelson, Brad Lang, J.M. Vargas, Saul Ott, Clint Jones, Corbin Foster, Mac McIntyre, Kelly Morgan,
Woo!
Timothy D. Burke, Joseph Finn, Dr. David Banner, Shadia Schultz, Don Hunt, William Sadler, Steven Zarello, Jen Valley, The Daily Dot, Brett Lashway / Grey Weirdo, Emmerich Salzberg, Ross Reeder, Cameron Cloutier, Richard Schultz, Steve Knotts, Steve Knotts, I'm sorry if I messed
Steve
that
K.
up, Brad McCarty, Bree Holland, Luke Ciancio, Lauren Kelleher, Jason White, Billy Campbell, Gabriel Girard, Dina DiCostanzo, Mike Young, Shannon Briggs, Gil Burt, Nora K. Ryan.
Woo!
And
did
the
we miss
person who kicked the most ass.
Motherfucking Winter.
Yeah.
Eric ass Berschlager.
He's got ass in his name.
Kicked the most ass. His tweets were consistently really funny.
They were great, yes. We should also mention that even though they are not here, Eric Asperschlager from F This Movie was tweeting with us. Heath Holland from F This Movie was tweeting with us. Alex Lawson was tweeting with us from F This Movie all the way from Washington, D.C. And Mike Pomero was here for most of the fest, had to leave to be apparently a pussy. And, but he was with us most of the day, and he was tweeting with us during Terminator. So thank you to everybody. Everybody from F This Movie was tweeting with us today, and it was awesome.
And if we've forgotten your name, that was just a quick summary of what I thought I saw everyone on there. So by all means, email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com to let us know that you were part of F This Movie Fest 2 also.
And spread the word and get everyone to participate next year, because this is more fun the bigger it gets. And also more exhausting.
Yeah. I think F This Movie 3 will be the movies of 2014, right?
I assume
so. Just whatever comes out in the first 2 months of 2014.
Yeah.
So it'll be in a theater.
Oh, show. tweeting through all the movies makes them go way faster, I feel like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Did anybody have a low point of the day?
I don't want to be the pariah, but I don't...
You're a pariah.
I am getting kind of impatient with The Rocketeer. I like it less and less the more I see it. Aww. And I feel bad about that. But I was getting really bored. I'm sorry.
On the helmet, though.
No, I mean, there's a lot. I mentioned it in a thing I wrote this week about the Addams Family. I really, really want to like the Addams Family, but I just don't. And I feel that way about The Rocketeer.
I think it might be the same case with the Addams Family movies, though, because I see Rocketeer as being the origin story. And if people had actually gone to see it, you would have had Rocketeer 2 that didn't have to concern itself with the origin story, and there would have been a lot more Rocketeering.
Yeah,
that's true of almost every single comic book movie, that by the time they get to the second movie... things are better.
That's why I can't wait for The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Me either. So many villains.
Oh my god, so much great CGI. So many cranes lining up.
A rogues gallery of mediocrity.
So let's go through the movies real quick and talk about them. First up was The Last Boy Scout. Say I if this was your first viewing of The Last Boy Scout.
I.
What right. if it's qualified, like I've seen maybe 15
Say
minutes
Say
I of it.
If you saw 15 minutes of it and then had your first kiss for the remaining hour and a half.
Oh my gosh, tell us story.
I had his first kiss today.
What, do you not read
your name rhymes with the bug?
By the way, it just came out that Erica doesn't read the site that she works
no,
on.
No, that's not true. I must have missed something.
It was really long.
I was watching trailers with Doug and it was epic. Thank
it
you.
Was fantastic.
So weigh in if this was your first viewing of The Last Boy Scout.
Yes.
Weigh in like, what did we think?
No, like, how much do you weigh? Yeah, what was your reaction to the movie?
There's only two people who are allowed to know that. I am a substantial man. I had never seen it. It had slipped. I just had never seen it before, and it was so much of its time. It so much screams 1991 and other films that are like it. So it's like this little undiscovered gem where you sort of open it up and it's like a lot of other things that you've seen that you've liked, and you sort of can't believe that you haven't seen this one yet.
Yeah, I loved 1991 Bruce Willis and Bruce Willis face, and it was a lot more, considering that the movie's mostly about football, which I really don't care about, and about shooting people, which I really avoid doing. And
most of the time,
I thought it was a lot of fun, and it was really of the time.
And let's not gloss over the reference of Bruce Willis face. I think that is something.
Yes.
BWF is in the lexicon of F This Movie.
Here's
that
the thing,
he
though.
Has two distinct faces. One is smug, and one is like surprised or looking for something.
It's think John.
Yeah. So Bruce Willis face came out in spades in this movie, and
I will say, and I said this I think on last week's podcast, that in the running before Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and obviously I made the right choice because I know what I'm doing.
Hey, give us some credit too, because we're all like, yeah, good job, Patrick.
Oh yeah, no, you guys get tons of credit. We've talked about it. Was Hudson Hawk, which I thought might be fun to tweet through, even though I recognize it's not a great movie. And I was rewatching it to see, like, okay, will this work? And I made it about a half hour. And I mean, I like Bruce Willis, but that is such an overload of Bruce Willis face. It's like everything that's sort of horrible about Bruce Willis in the early '90s.
Define horrible.
he's singing a lot and like sipping cappuccino and smirking and making jokes.
I can define insufferable Bruce Willis. When you posted the picture from Hudson Hawk, the thing it reminded me of, and this might just be a reference for older people,
The Return of Bruno.
Well, that, and he did a series of commercials for Seagram's wine coolers, where he was trying to make it something that men would actually drink.
Yeah.
And mission accomplished.
You know, that's different than Zima, right?
No. You can look the commercials up on YouTube.
Fantastic.
It's like him, like, parading around, like, I'm cooler than shit, and he's singing the stupid song, which once you hear it, you can't get out of your head.
That's all of Hudson Hawk. Is like,
Seagram's Golden Wine Cooler. Oh, shut the fuck up.
A couple of things I really like with Last Boy Scout is that it's just such a relief sometimes to see an action movie that shoots action well, where you can make sense of the choreography and what is happening to the characters in the scene, and that's becoming less and less apparent with newer movies. And then also, this was like Shane Black at the height of his influence, because he's getting paid millions of dollars to write these screenplays, so it's clearly his vision, and he can just kind of... There's no consensus in this. This is Shane Black's movie, and Tony Scott directs the hell out of it, and it's just a nice... It's a pairing that makes sense.
I'm surprised that The Last Boy Scout isn't more well-known as an early 90s kind of Simpson-Bruckheimer type of movie, because so much of it, including the death of the main villain, is comic book. It's ridiculous. It kind of, you know, checks off all those boxes where you think that, like, oh, this... Why isn't this just as popular as Top Gun? I know why it's not, because Top Gun is the best.
Yes, dog.
Thank you, Erica.
I'm X3D 1 week.
Why isn't it more as popular as...
The
like,
thoughts of Doug don't necessarily reflect the thoughts of this movie.
Why isn't it as popular as a Michael Bay film or whatever? Because it is... I mean, it's pretty...
Better than all of
it's
those?
Ridiculous.
When Doug
talks
about Top Gun, there's an asterisk next to the word Top Gun, which takes you to the shitting on
it's
the classics article.
It's
because
he's been
Top
doping
Gun.
When he's been talking about Top Gun.
Because he's dope.
You mean he's addicted to crack?
It's interesting that you bring
guys,
up...
I'm right here.
It's interesting that you bring up Michael Bay, though, because The Last Boy Scout in some ways reminds me of, like, Bad Boys 2, which isn't a movie that I like all that much, even though it's weirdly watchable. But in terms of, like... A lot
but
of
you've
action.
Watched that movie quite
way
a lot.
Too many times.
Well, that's
the joke. Yeah,
that's the joke.
Last Boy Scout. I think part of it is that it's like it's such a kind of mean spirited movie. Like, there's action movies that are pretty palatable to a lot of people. Last Boy Scout, like, it's all one liners. It's like an action movie on steroids. It really is. It's like all one liners, all swearing, extremely violent, including the death of the main bad guy, which is inspired casting, by the way, Taylor Negron.
And you had pointed out during the screening, but I don't think on Twitter, that after about 20 minutes, it becomes a series of Bruce Willis is cornered, Bruce Willis gets the shit kicked out of him, and then Bruce Willis finds a way to inflict more pain on them and get away so that he can be caught again and the cycle can begin again.
Yeah, how many ways can Bruce Willis escape
which
is
still
this? Fun. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's Bruce Willis's Sisyphean nightmare.
I actually think that maybe part of the reason why it's not more popular, in all seriousness, is Damon Wayans. I don't think he's think he's a very like likable person. He's just such a weird.
I think
in
'91 he was the reason. He was the reason I wanted to see this more than anything. And I loved action movies, and I loved Bruce Willis, so obviously I wanted to see it anyway. But I was so intrigued by the notion of. So the guy from In Living Color is going to be in an action movie? Like, that was weird to me, and I wanted to see it for that reason.
In this movie, isn't his character's nickname Weak Link?
It's not him as a person or as a performer. It's the concept of his popularity at the time that would have gotten him the gig in this movie that dates the movie.
It's weird, right?
Does that make any sense?
It does.
The fact that he was popular enough to get opposite...
He was blah, 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 blank man.
Makes you go, what were the 90s like?
1991, that was during his 15 minutes.
Well, then they tried to make Lightning Strike twice by pairing up his brother, Keenan Ivory Wayans, with Steven Seagal in The Glimmer Man.
That was a low-down, dirty shame.
You burnt Wayans family?
No!
Folks, he'll be here all week.
Doug and I,
that thing was brought to you by Zima.
Doug and I rented a lowdown. Doug and I rented a lowdown Dirty Shame in the early 90s, desperately trying to find a
who hasn't
gem,
been there.
And we still quote it to this day. Oh. Jada Pinkett saying, I'm on the beach.
I love Damon Wayans Jr.
He's not been in an action movie.
I've seen him do stand-up. Very funny.
Really?
Yeah.
I've seen him in the pilot for New Girl.
Anyone else have a Damon Wayans Jr. story they want to share?
Next movie.
Mark, was that your first viewing of The Last Boy Scout?
No, it wasn't. I'd seen it a couple of times before.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to let the plebeians speak first.
Mark is being humble. He did his doctoral thesis on Last Boy Scout.
Right, which is why I...
But that school was in Paraguay, right. So it doesn't
matter. That's why I'm unemployed at this point. I think just... Part of it is why I get sort of lost in the haze of everything. It just like
Lost, John Locke reference.
I feel like when I'm thinking about the early 90s, but I just think of like Lethal Weapon, right? This movie just doesn't. It just I feel like it just gets lost in the haze of all the other different ones.
I think about Bird on a Wire.
You're the
Anyone? No.
Yeah, the buddy, like the 48 hours inspired buddy movie became very popular from like 86 to 93. Oh, yeah.
The grudging buddy movie, because of course they have to hate each other at the beginning, because then it becomes a love story.
But this movie, it makes even less sense, because they're not forced, like, no one's forcing them to pair up, but for some reason they just... rip on each other all the time. I said about three quarters of the way through the movie that one day I want to watch this movie and have a little one-liner counter, because for real, like Tango and Cash, there are long stretches where no one speaks in anything but like smart-ass one-liners. That's the only way they communicate. Maybe Shane Black was just on autopilot at this point.
Or cocaine.
Should we move on to The Rocketeer? Yeah. Let's start with Adam.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I saw what I needed to say about The Rocketeer. I want to like it more than I do like it. And, I don't know. I could
support that, though. I've never seen the movie before, and I think that part of my... I got a little... Like, it's slow. It's to JB's point, too, it's kind of deliberately so slow. But I think that, and honestly, watching it on a Twitter festival is not the best way to watch it for the first time. But I think it's more a movie that I can appreciate instead of a movie that I want to go to on my DVD shelf and watch. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, I'm just wondering if I like it less now because I've seen Joe Johnson do this movie better with Captain America. Because before Captain America, I think I liked The Rocketeer more. But now I'm comparing it to Captain America.
Right. And there's parts of it that are a lot like Captain America. Yeah. I mean, the Alan Arkin character is the Stanley Tucci character in Captain America. But Alan Arkin is in The Rocketeer, and I always like Alan Arkin, and I think he's really, really good here. What surprised me watching it this time, because I don't think I've seen this a whole bunch of times, is that my favorite shot in the whole film, watching it this afternoon, is much shorter and tossed off than I remember. In my memory, it was this big thing. And I remembered it being indoors, and it turns out to be outdoors.
What's the shot?
I don't think this is spoilers, because we just watched the movie and tweeted about it. At one point, they're all shooting at these Nazis that have suddenly appeared everywhere. And Paul Sorvino as the gangster, and this other guy as the FBI agent, find themselves shooting. They're both shooting at the Nazis. And Sorvino sort of creates a moment where he looks at the FBI guy and it's like, we may be on opposite sides of the law, but we're no Nazis.
Right.
And my mind had turned that into like a 5-minute thing. It's really fast. Selective memory, folks.
Well, that was your LSD days, right?
It's DSO.
When they announced
some DSOs.
When they announced Joe Johnston for Captain America... I think everybody said, like, oh, that's a good choice, because everybody said, he did The Rocketeer, and that's what this is going to be, so this will work. It definitely has a much different energy than all of the other movies that we watched today, I think. Mm-hmm. This was your first viewing, correct, Mark?
Yeah. I really liked it. I thought, I think we talked a little bit about this while we were watching it, which was, like, we always, like, I think we thought, like, this is good, and it's not, you know, like, Adam didn't like it, but that's fine, but, like, it's good. And we were wondering why had I not seen this before? Like, when I was a kid, which is, you know, this I would say The Rocketeer sort of aimed at a younger audience, or it can be.
Yeah.
Like, why didn't I want to watch it when it first came out? Like, I was, like, around 14 or 13, 14 when it first came out.
Yeah.
In 91. I was like, why didn't I want to go see it? I think part of it was I couldn't figure out, it wasn't like a superhero story.
And I think we talked about this during the fest, that it was a marketing problem, because older people, I think, assumed it was a children's film, and children looked at it and said, I don't give a shit about that. Mm-hmm. They should have marketed it in the Indiana Jones vein.
Right.
Well, that's the thing you can't really remember. Like, what was every TV spot like? What were all the tie-ins like? You don't really remember looking back.
I knew I wanted to see it, and I think I went opening day because I think at that point I was still chasing Batman. Yeah. I had seen Batman in 89, and then
also you wanted to see every movie.
Oh, that's true.
And also you were chasing the dragon. But
it's true, though. Dick
Tracy came out the following year, and I was like, that's going to be this year's Batman. Spoilers, it's not. And then Rocketeer came out the following year, and I thought, well, that's going to be this year's Batman. And I ended up enjoying it, but in a very different way than I enjoyed Batman at the time. And now, as an adult, obviously I prefer the Rocketeer to the Tim Burton Batman.
Which is crazy. I think that's
the Rocketeer
just an interesting...
has no prince.
That's true. There's a lot of prints in The Last Boy Scout, though, so I have my fill.
A few months ago, Patrick and I did a podcast on the Tim Burton Batman, and I went back and watched it again because I hadn't seen it in a dog's age. And I was amazed at what that movie is now compared to my memory of it.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
That's one way of putting it.
But my 1989 self has such a happy memory of seeing it, and then...
It fits the movie.
No, it was such. I still remember what a big deal it was.
Yeah,
right? And Patrick talked about that. As I mentioned during the podcast, I'm sorry. Let me roll that back. As I mentioned during the Twitter Film Festival or whatever stage in today we are at, if you like, the ambulances are coming. Let me get this out. If you like The Rocketeer, the bulldog shaped diner is still at the Disney Hollywood Studios in Orlando.
And is it still on the river?
Yeah, and if you get on the tram for the studio tour and the Catastrophe Canyon thing, they take you right past the Bulldog Cafe, and it's kind of cute. But the highlight for me of that was there's some Blade Runner spinner cars that they have parked by this lake, and that's the coolest thing ever.
And I know the movie lost money at the time, and... it seems like in years since it has definitely found an audience, and I think now its reputation is very positive, and I'm surprised that there hasn't been more talk of either a sequel or a remake in the way that, like, all of a sudden Tron was sort of rebooted. Like, this seems like a movie that they would try and use the property again and do something with it. But I think the problem is Billy Campbell's gotten a little bit old, and Jennifer Connelly is now a husk. And
he's a cyborg.
What happened?
That's a shame.
I feel like Billy Campbell never got the fame that he deserved.
Like, it's hard
to
say
if
he deserved it or not.
Certainly,
yeah,
we know a lot of people who know of him and like him, but
he's not a heavyweight, though. I don't think. I think that he's fine in this movie.
Yeah, he works in the movie,
but I don't think he's like. I don't know how much range. I mean, again, not to say we would know, but how much range does he have? How could he, you know, pull off some other stuff?
Well, what's he like in Enough?
Delightful.
he's a peach.
Yeah. He's not delightful. But that was deliberate. He's a woman beater.
Right.
So, fuck that noise.
And we don't.
No.
And we don't like that, right?
Only during the last Boy Scout.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure.
Then we move on.
We're all on the same page. Any other thoughts on The Rocketeer?
I think just what you were saying about the remake kind of stuff. I think in this post-Avengers world that we live in, I think it might be difficult to make like a small to medium-sized superhero type of story.
Right.
Especially if it's not comic book-based, necessarily.
Or like, based on a property that people might know.
Sure, because that doesn't have that like built-in fan base or whatever. So I would be interested in seeing it like a part two or whatever. But
was The Rocketeer a comic book? Or, I mean,
it was.
They remade The Rocketeer now. The only reason they would do that was so they could use 3D to make him Rocketeer out of this.
But that's something actually, you know,
Zac Efron would be the Rocketeer.
You speak to something
which you'd be fine with, right?
Zac Efron's great in everything he's in. The Rocketeer had very, like, not enough rocketeering. Like, I mean, that's, I mean, I know it's the origin story.
I agree with that completely.
But that's something that they would do, like, that we'd complain about, like, oh, 3D is the worst. And it is, definitely the worst. But it's like, he'd be, you know, doing too much CGI. And I'm like,
10-minute rocketeering sequence that didn't develop character that didn't advance
that
the
was
plot,
completely
that was like,
for IQ.
I think you'd see the Rocketeer going, yippee, so this is pod racing!
I will say this, though. I'm not the biggest Rocketeer fan, but I'd rather watch 10 more Rocketeer sequels than Iron Man 3.
I'd like to see Iron Man 3.
Shane Black.
Oh, I take it all back.
Okay. That's what has me interested about Iron Man 3, honestly. I could care less about a sequel to Iron Man, but
you could care
I
want to
see. That's what I said.
Semantics.
I mean, I couldn't care less.
I think The Rocketeer sounds like a seventh grade girl dance club. Rocketeers.
Yay! One more mention of Jennifer Connelly in that white dress.
It doesn't have to be the only mention. Okay. We can keep talking
about
it.
Well, but one more, like, before we move on, we should just think about her and how she looks.
I haven't stopped.
She's a terrible babysitter, as shown in Labyrinth.
True.
But she will do anything for money.
Yeah.
If you've seen Requiem for a Dream.
What?
You guys, what? What? You keep making that noise, but I don't understand
hashtag
what
drugs.
The noise means.
Patrick, when you bring up that movie, you just remind all of us about how bad drugs are.
and how great dongs are.
We'll get to bad drugs in one more movie. So let's move on to movie number three. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Oh, man. What
go!
What a fun, exciting, hilarious,
action-packed,
excellent,
romantic,
what?
Touching, and also kind of scary
thrill
ride
journey. You know, the joke, obviously, we've made the last couple weeks is that we know what we're doing. Patrick specifically knows what he's doing.
Thank you.
The second F this Movie Fest, the second time we've put something out there that people want to watch, we're doing this on Twitter. It's not a traditional film festival, so we have to have something. But above and beyond that, it's not just a ridiculous movie that you can make fun of. It knows what it is. It's really smart, I think. It's so much above and beyond even the first movie. You know, it was funny, the last podcast we did about the F Everything 1991 theme, you had mentioned how you can make an argument that Bogus Journey is better than the first one. And I'm on board.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I like the first one, too.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. But the first one is kind of just kind of delivers on its premise, you know what I mean? Like, these two goofy guys, they round up people through history, and it's super entertaining, and I'm a huge fan of the first movie. But this one goes to such crazy directions,
and
it's
so
ambitious.
It is. I think that's a huge part. The first one, I think, knew what it was, too, to some extent, but it was still just delivering kind of like, hey, we're stoners, and we're going to do these crazy things.
I never saw them as stoners. Well, people keep saying that it's like
I don't know
what
else to call them.
Right,
you know, like, I just think they're like, they're kind of...
They're metalheads.
Slackers.
Yeah, just, I guess slacker, but I mean, it's all kind of the same...
Yes.
Metalhead
I thought the first one got famous because it was so much better than it had any right to be that people went expecting my hand is very low to the floor, and they got more than that.
Where's
and
your
then it, that's none of your business.
and then instead of coasting and
cashing in, the second one is just so much more ambitious and so much. It's like people liked the first one and that it kind of went in all these goofy directions. We can amp that up in the second
one. But my memory is that the second one was not a big hit, and I could be wrong about that. I feel like the first one was a modest success enough to generate a sequel, obviously. My memory is that the second one was not a huge hit. And like I said, I could be wrong, but it does seem like the kind of movie that might put audiences off who don't know what to make of it.
Well, what's interesting, too, is I feel like if a casual watcher, like if I was watching this movie and someone just...
Casually. Like in slacks.
No, not if I was watching it seriously.
Oh, okay.
And someone walked in casually.
Like in a tux.
So you're in a tux and this guy's in
jorts.
Like chinos.
Jorts.
Got it. Jorts.
Like a hockey jersey.
Kevin Smith
absolutely. Okay. But no, a person who walks in...
Baked out of his mind.
Why is this not on video?
Making shitty movies.
You might respond to the stoner element.
Oh, yeah, good point.
But my point is, I think I'll use a dumb example. Like, if my mom were to see it, she'd see two characters going like, excellent!
Just like her son.
No, just like, saying excellent, going like, doing guitar riffs and be like, oh, this is stupid.
And
not realizing, like, yeah, that's the point. And they know that it's stupid, and they're doing it. And at one point, the evil usses are doing the guitar thing, and they respond with the guitar thing, and it's like this meta thing that's like, this is absurd.
I had said in response to somebody's comment, somebody who had posted that, like, they weren't really looking forward to seeing this, or like, that'll be interesting, or whatever, I said, like, I remember it being really stupid, and I think I responded like, and you'll find out, it's actually a really smart movie disguised as a stupid one.
Yeah.
And I think that's true.
And we've had this discussion before, and I have it with my film study students every semester, I really do, that there is a world of difference between stupid and silly. And silly is a very different thing, and silly is hard, and I would suggest that Bill and Ted's is silly. Another thing I wanted to comment on, because earlier in the week you had posted something, because I'm one of these Keanu bashers who constantly repeats that Hamlet story because I think it's hilarious. I will grant you this. The fact that he did this, where he sort of recreates this goofy character that he'd done previously, and Point Break the same year, you have to kind of hand him some credit for having something of a range. But when you originally posted the comments that you did, I wondered, because you had said Point Break, Bill and Ted, My Own Private Idaho, if it's him or the fact that he appeared in three films that have a very different tone. And that does some of the job.
Sure, but you just said yourself, I mean, his yes. performance in at least two of those movies is very different.
Yes,
so.
I will grant you that.
One thing I like about Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is that I think one of you guys mentioned on a podcast once, it's like a movie that feels like they're getting away with something. And it's very much one of those. It has kind of the feel like, all right, it was made by Orion Pictures, the now defunct Orion. And I can just picture like Mr. Orion on the set. And he's like really like peeking into chubby like the soundstage, chubby a cigar, watching Silence of the
Tom
Lambs.
Orion here.
And seeing how Silence of the Lambs is going. And he's just like, oh, Bill and Ted, they'll take care of themselves. They only got $10 million to work with. And then like, they're just doing, it's just like Willy Wonka's factory in there. And they're just doing crazy stuff. And
yeah. But like allusions to Bergman movies.
Yeah, and it's got like touches where it looks like somebody was like, I got a crazy station thing in my garage. I can bring it to the set tomorrow and we can just figure out something to do with it.
I have a big one or two little.
Yeah. Yeah,
and what do you guys think of this terrifying Easter Bunny? And on the surface, there's nothing terrifying about that Easter Bunny. If you look at it, it's just big and adorable. It's all about context.
And we need a scary grandma. Alex, this is the job for you.
You mean F this movie follower, Alex Winter?
Yes.
Thanks to Alex Winter for participating. And I have to thank, I think it was Mac McIntyre, I apologize if I'm crediting the wrong person, who told us that the writer and director cameoed during the seance scene, because one of my favorite line deliveries in the movie always has been Clark Gable. And that's Ed Solomon who wrote the movie, and I'm happy to know that. I did not know that before F this movie fest.
Yeah. I like it. It's a movie that takes big swings. And it doesn't connect all the time.
Yeah.
But it does enough where you have to give it a lot of credit for that. And I almost like it more because so many people want to be elitist on it. And they just want to thumb their noses at it without even watching it. And I'm not calling anybody out, but I'm just saying that it makes me want to defend it even more because it's awesome. And it's your loss if you don't give it a chance.
Its reach exceeds its grasp in some of the visual effects, but it's interesting because we've talked about this. Anything that's done in post, the technology wasn't up to the level that they needed, but anything that they did on the set with a physical effect, like the bunny and the grandma makeup and say what you want, station, those I think hold up really well and look good. When they get to heaven and suddenly they're doing this thing where they're really tiny and I even think their shadows are animated, that doesn't work as well.
But then even, like, some of the dialogue covers up when they get to hell, and, like, the devil effect is not great, but then they have the great line about how our album covers lied to us. that's phenomenal. I don't know.
And the movie isn't cynical.
No, definitely not.
It knows what it is, and it has a great sort of tone.
Yeah. It's broken up into these little, like, segments, too, so that even if there's one sequence that you're not crazy about, it's like, oh, this is the part where they're dead. This is where they go to hell. This is where they go to heaven. This
because
is where they're building the robots. Oh, what kind of a journey would you call it? Then?
Hold on, there'll be something else.
Yeah, right.
And to branch off of what Jan said, this wonderful notion that they might be incredibly stupid, but their hearts are in the right place, and that's really important.
Yep.
I love that we're defending this movie so much because everything we're saying is true, and I'm thinking, I just have to sit back and be like, we're talking about Bill and Ted's bogus journey. Yeah. This is great.
Didn't somebody tweet, they said, okay, are we the only people on the planet right now watching this? Possibly.
I was surprised that there was kind of this negative undercurrent about the prospect of watching this movie. Maybe because I'd seen it so many times when my son was young.
Sure.
And he loved it, and I thought it was great. So
I think also
before
you kind of get into the spirit of the F This Movie Fest, the Twitter kind of aspect of it and the communal craziness of it, you think about 1991, and there's a lot of, like, you could watch Silence of the Lambs. Would Silence of the Lambs be a good movie for a Twitter? Absolutely not.
No.
So you've got to pick, and you've got to pick something like kind of like an old mixtape. You can't have everything be a driving hit. It's got to have, you know, ebbs and flows and have a break and have a comedy mixed in with crazy gangster drama from New York City.
It's the name of the festival is not best of.
Right,
right. No, definitely not. Choose,
you know? Until I saw it again this afternoon, my biggest memory of the film, because I don't think I ever watched it with our son way back when. I remember seeing it when it first came out. My biggest memory of the film was Death playing Twister. Yeah. That was the image I carried in my
head. I think
head.
It was in like a lot of the promos and stuff too, yeah.
Death obviously figured very heavily into the marketing because he's on the poster. In addition to Bill and Ted.
Damn right.
A poster that I used to have hanging in my room right next to the Point Break poster. Because I saw them on the same day.
It was a great
one. Mark, on? Anything to say about Bogus Journey?
I don't.
Sandy Miss High School Football Rules.
Right. I love that. I like that I uses the word bogus, which I feel like is not used enough.
Yeah.
And it dates it a little bit, but I love the word bogus. So yeah. Thanks for using the word bogus.
I think you guys should start using it more on the podcast.
Sure.
What's the word he uses to describe heaven when they get there? Most
atypical.
Like, most atypical. <That's what laughs> Bew, anything about Bogus Journey?
You guys said it all.
Yeah, we did.
New Jack.
All right, and then cue up the iced tea, because here comes Living. Everybody harmonize.
I wish everybody could see Adam throw himself into it. He had singing face on.
Full on singing. I don't have ass LeVert. Patrick and Adam making glee faces.
New Jack City.
It was picture perfect.
A movie I saw in the theater in 91 because I was away from my parents and I went on vacation with my friend to Florida for the first time, and instead of going out in the sun or seeing anything Florida had to offer, we went to the movies every day and saw New Jack City, which I loved. I bought the soundtrack. I knew all the words to New Jack Hustler. I still do, everyone.
Sing it.
I'm not going to know. Anybody on New Jack City?
It's a great movie, and I think it's really underrated. Yeah. I think it's better than Scarface. I'll put that out there. I think it's leaner.
And it is, just, yeah, definitely.
It's a movie that, there was one part where, I think it was the montage where Wesley Snipes and his gang were trying to take over from the Italian mobsters, and I just thought to myself, and I had to say it out loud, I'm like, Mario Van Peebles is directing the hell out of this sequence, and it's very much a movie with, like, an authorial stamp to it, and Wesley Snipes is playing it like, this is my movie star part, and I'm going to bite into it and just shake the meat with it and stuff, and it's great, and the music's good. It's very much of its time, but I'm very fond of the early 90s, and I love that hip-hop type of scene. I just think that unironically, it's fun ironically, but unironically, it's just so good. Oh, I'm getting the cue-off music. No.
Wait, thank Jesus.
I can pick the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Siri was like just agreeing with you.
I'd like to thank Anne Hathaway's agent.
Yep.
Yeah.
Throw your hair out when you win the Oscar, Anne. We're done with it.
It is a movie where, like, all these things came together at exactly the right time, what you're saying. Like, sort of the energy of it and the music and the clothes and the style. And it sort of turns Ice-T into an action star, and it finds something useful to do with Judd Nelson and Mario Van Peebles being a new director, like you said. Like, really tries to prove himself, and it makes a movie star out of Wesley Snipes and Chris Rock, who again was on Saturday Night Live at the time, turns in this really good dramatic performance.
What else has Mario Van Peebles directed?
Only a handful of movies. Posse, a western with like Tone Loc. Everybody go out and see it.
A film called Badass, which is about his father making the film Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song in the early 70s. And that film was actually really, really good.
And that was the first movie he had done really since New Jack City that people said, oh, right, he's a talented director.
And it's interesting because he's known more as an actor, and his acting is not great. Like, he's not
the best thing in the
movie.
He's
not the best thing in the movie by any
means. But he
also
doesn't have that much to do.
But honestly, yeah, his character is superfluous. It doesn't seem like, it's just kind of like the sergeant in charge of, like, the detectives or something. I don't even know what he was doing.
He's like Sergeant Exposition in most of the scenes.
Yeah.
Every so often, I'll show up at this apartment to tell you some things. Bye. Sometimes on the beach, I'll have a baby.
He's done through a lot.
But his directing is great. Yeah, it's a great looking movie. And this, we saw it on Blu-rays, and I've never seen it. I think the previous time I saw it was like VHS on a tube TV that was 25 inches at most.
It's certainly colorful, what with the costumes and all.
Yeah, definitely.
Rhythm Nation.
it's a triumph of, like, interesting casting. I just mentioned all the performances, but there's a lot of sort of atypical casting in the movie, and I think it all pays off.
I like that Wesley Snipes. Snipes?
Did you say Wesley S?
I don't know.
Nice.
That's a different guy, right? I like that he just plays he's Wesley Snipes has turned into, and this might be where the podcast at some point, like doing a Wesley Snipes movie, but he's just turned into this figure of, like, comedic just proportions. Like, he's just a target of satire. He's
right.
Just turned into this silly kind of person. All of his own doing, obviously. But I like that in this one, it's just straight up, like, bad. It's like what you were saying, Adam. Like, just badass Wesley Snipes. And you just remember, you know what? Man, I love this guy when he was in movies. It was great, and I liked watching the movies that he was in. Even, like, silly ones, like, friggin', like, Demolition Man.
Whoa, silly.
It's a silly movie, Doug. It's a silly movie.
You know, but
Taco Bell wins in the future. It's a silly
movie. No, that's great. I love Demolition
Man. My point is, I think I'm just piggybacking on what you said. Like, sure. Does make, it kind of was like, wow, this guy, like, is oozing confidence and, like, the swagger.
Yeah.
And I remember him as Simon Phoenix in Demolition Man. He has the same kind of mojo, and it's like, this is just...
Mark, wasn't part of your plan, but don't mess around with the Demolition Man.
I won't.
Will he ever be back? Will he ever get a comeback?
When it comes out of prison,
I don't know.
When?
It seemed like he was going to. What was Brooklyn's Finest?
Brooklyn's Finest, I thought, was decent.
And he was kind of good in it, and for the first time, it seemed like he wasn't phoning it in, and it was like, is this the start of Wesley Snipes coming back? Because maybe he'll just do sort of character parts. And
he's
then instead
jail,
he went to jail.
Yeah. He's getting out of jail in July. I have a marathon planned out for his release.
What's in the marathon?
Prisoner 57.
You gotta do White Men Can't Jump and Major League and Passenger 57 and
Murder at
16. You know,
wait, what about
the address that changes all the rules?
That's
Samuel
Jackson.
Yes. Oh, yes, well.
The best action movie ever made, Money Train.
Blade.
The very cute
the
One Night Stand.
Wait, what's the address that changes all the rules?
One Night Stand.
Murder at 1600.
I remember that movie.
It was cute.
Someone I know wrote that.
Yeah.
Wayne Beach wrote that.
It's cute.
And then told me he took the money and Wesley rewrote the entire script. He said nothing that he wrote survived.
It's for the best. It's fascinating, though, the movies that you just mentioned, like...
Yeah.
Major League and White Men Can't Jump, all these movies, it's like, oh my god, Wesley Snipes was kick-ass.
He had a good roster for a while,
right?
Yeah. He's going to end up in an Expendables movie.
And he's great in that movie. He kind of steals that
Willie
movie.
Willie Mays Hayes?
Yeah. New Jack City is very, very entertaining, and I like the way that it combines a gangster movie and sort of a traditional action movie. And somebody posited that this was the movie that invented the reputation of Scarface in sort of the gangster rap community, that everybody has these giant posters of Scarface hanging up on MTV Cribs, because Nino Brown is constantly watching Scarface in this movie. And listen, guys, I'm going to name drop here real quick. I once talked to Judd Nelson. Okay? I don't like to do it. Listen.
It's true. It's true.
So Judd
I'm
and
a witness.
I.
Much better than
Judd and
I'm
I. Have you guys ever talked to any of the Breakfast Club? Go ahead. Go ahead.
No.
Tell your stories.
No.
No? Okay. Okay, then. I got the conch.
I talked at Ali Sheedy, but you wouldn't talk back.
Wait. Time out. You got
I love
the,
doing made to order.
You have the what?
Cock.
You have the cock.
and we. I talked about that with Judd Nelson, and
so
he had
jokes.
The best. Asmar. He had the best line about it. He said, yeah, the people don't get. It's ironic that it has established that reputation, because clearly Nino Brown learns all the wrong lessons from Scarface, that he wants to be Scarface, this guy who goes out face down in a pile of cocaine riddled with bullets.
And playing basketball in slacks, but no shirt.
That's Nino Brown. I'm talking about Tony Montana.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
If you're good at basketball, you play it in slacks.
John Mulaney makes reference to that on his album.
He might.
That if it's popular with real life criminals, you want to ask them, have you seen the end of the movie?
And I don't know for sure. We didn't get like an official weigh in, but I feel like New Jack City might have been the least seen of the movies we watched today, but I guess I don't know for sure. It seemed like it was the first time for a lot of people watching it. Before we started, a lot of people said, New Jack City, Virgin.
I'd
and then a lot of people said, Virgin, Virgin. Which I was like, okay, that's fine. We're not judging.
I think it was
from
the first time I had seen it since it first came out, so I was...
Yeah.
And I think it actually, in the whole scheme of the day, in terms of the five movies, this was the fourth.
Yeah.
And I think it was probably tweeted about the least, and I think people were maybe preparing themselves for the epic tweet-off that was Terminator 2, which we'll get to in a little bit, but I felt like it was, you know, kind of, it dropped down a little bit, just people were, you know, it was the gathering their steam.
It was the palate cleanser before Arnold.
But it was great. It's, again, it looked great. The pace was really well. It goes by pretty quickly. Chris Rock, like you pointed out numerous times, never has given a better performance. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised, actually, how quickly, spoilers, whatever, how quickly his character is not around in the second half.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
And Ice-T is great.
Yeah.
I really like Ice-T.
Was this his first kind of...
I mean, he had done, like, a little part in Colors, and I think he's in, like, an old canon movie, like, maybe Breaking 2, or he's in, like, this giant robot. He's, like, performing in a concert, but he's in this weird, like, robot suit. Some old canon movie. I can't remember which one.
The Dynamic Dish Doer.
I believe he's the Dynamic Dish
Doer. Was he married to Mrs. Ice-T when he filmed this?
I don't think he was. No. Somebody was asking if this was pre or post Coco.
You know, if you consider the people in it and the milieu.
Oh, nice. Ooh, fancy pants.
You've seen Judd Nelson. You've seen Judd Nelson. Jan knows the word milieu.
Yeah, there you go. But and the subject matter and everything. It's also a movie that's not really cynical. It could be a lot darker and a lot more cynical about how, you know, its character arcs and stuff, but it's not. There's this undercurrent of drugs are bad and we have to do something about
it.
Right. Yeah. It's not even really an undercurrent. It's an it's a current, isn't it?
For a few minutes, there's a danger it's going to get cynical with Wesley Snipes' speech at the end of the courtroom scene. But then he's instantly dispatched. And, oh, well, that's the cynicism of a dead man.
And then what's your favorite part of the movie, Patrick?
Judd Nelson smiling.
There you go.
So great.
There's also, but the drugs are bad also is in Last Boy Scout. I kind of forgot that beat where Damon Wayans like pulls out some whatever and Bruce Willis is like, heck no.
The drugs are
that's
bad.
One of the things I like about New Jack City, too, is that as much as it's sort of this fantastical Hollywood action crime movie, it is about this real thing when, like, sort of crack came onto the scene and changed crime, you know.
Topical.
Yeah.
I feel like that's my memory, too, as, like, a kid. That was the first kind of major pop culture
and you're
type
like,
thing.
It just looks like cracked off pieces of soap.
It was the major pop culture thing that was like, well, this is the worst thing possible. Yeah. You see Pookie in the crack den, whatever, and it's like, this, I've never seen, a human being in this state, unless they're like
now when he reappears with the turkey with the bad teeth and the white lips, it's very disturbing.
Yeah. And then the final movie of the festival, Terminator 2.
Dun dun dun.
That's not what the music sounds like at all.
Much better.
Terminator 2, obviously deliberately chosen to close out the festival because we want to finish on a high note, on a bang. And oddly
by that
enough,
you mean Edward Furlong's voice.
Yes, of course.
Let's all
when the sun goes down.
You don't have to kill.
This surprisingly was a little bit controversial. There were more people not as much in love with Terminator 2. I just expected it to be a love fest with everybody, and some people weren't liking it. But let's weigh in on...
including Eric Asperschlager.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, the world's a rainbow. People are entitled to their opinion.
Yeah, that's okay.
Eric's allowed not to like it.
There's just so much cool
love you,
stuff
Eric.
In it. So much cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's not just 1991 me reacting to all the cool stuff
in
it.
I was surprised how much of the cool stuff held up.
There's so much, and it's like he sat down and made a list of like, and this will be cool, and this, and in the span of a single action set piece, there's like 15 cool things. We're not just waiting for one.
So one good example of that, and I think you had either tweeted or you said something about it, when that amazing chase scene in the reservoir ends and the truck is in flames, that's when a lesser director who's not crazy would have ended it. But when Robert Patrick walks out of the flames, it's like, ooh, this is, you just got delirious.
Yeah.
I mean, how many of the special effects in this film were brand new?
I mean, not necessarily all of them, because he had done a lot of them in The Abyss. He had experimented with, like, that, it was called the water tentacle, and that was, like, the first real-looking just CGI. And that's a lot of what the liquid metal was. But in The Abyss, it was this weird afterthought. It was confined to, like, the very end of the movie. And this movie, I feel like it was used to much better effect. When I saw this movie in 1991, there were so many things that I just thought, I've never seen that before. Right. That's incredible.
And the entire audience in the theater reacted because I so vividly remember when Robert Patrick goes through the prison bars.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was like watching a magician. You could, given your movie experience before then, you could not figure out how the hell they ever could have done that.
Right. Yeah.
When Michael Pomero was still here earlier, he was talking about when he saw that in the theater and how the audience just was like cheering and so loud and just loving every second of it.
Yeah.
And that it was such a fun experience. And you said you had the same thing, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I was at the first show, first day, and every couple of minutes there was something else that had the audience cheering because it was so cool. I feel like some of the mixed reaction today, I know people have problems with Ed Furlong and problems with some of the hokey writing because James Cameron, you know, his screenplays are not always
because James Cameron.
Yeah, is the fact that the first act is this great, long, sustained action set piece, and the last act is one of the most amazing action set pieces you've ever seen since, like, the car chase at the end of The Road Warrior. But the middle, there's actually not very much action. It's a lot of, like, dialogue and character stuff, and I think people were either let down by the lack of action or just they felt like the dialogue and character stuff was bad.
Which is valid.
It is, yeah. I mean, I don't get bored during that stuff, maybe because I know what's coming, but also because I think some of the things that they're talking about are interesting. Like, if we know this is coming, do we try to change it? I don't know. I think that's interesting because it presents you with Miles Dyson, this guy who is basically going to end the world, and he finds out what he's responsible for, and his reaction is, oh, I don't want that to happen. Let me help you.
Right. I think somebody said that it's like the first time in a movie you see like the middle manager, corporate executive guy who's like, oh, yeah, that sucks. I shouldn't do that.
Let's
like,
not do that. Right.
It's usually just so cynical and just cartoonish.
Like, it's like, I don't believe you. I'm going to make millions of dollars.
I'm going to be even worse now.
That a lesser movie would have had him be one of the bad guys. You're not changing it. This is how I become a millionaire.
Or go along with it only to twist at the end like, ha-ha, now I've got your chip. and also that whole middle section is driven by the Linda Hamilton performance, which I think is so great, and I just love, if you think about who she was in that first movie, and it's so rare for a sequel, you know, most sequels just, let's do the same movie over again, and this one changes things in such interesting ways by making Arnold Schwarzenegger the good guy, by inventing a new, way cooler robot that's like a great, great villain, and by taking the Sarah Connor character to a place that you just never could have anticipated watching the first Terminator.
And earlier we were talking about physical effects versus like CGI. This film invented CGI, and yet at the heart of it, the exercise and stuff that Linda Hamilton did, talk about a physical effect. When the film came out, it was like, oh my God, that's kind of amazing.
There's something about the effects in this movie that they do CGI when there's no other way they could possibly do the thing that they're going to show.
Right.
But everything else that they could do, they do practically.
Yeah, like he actually has metal... Great. Prosthetics on his hands.
Right, and they're actually like flying, I think Alex Lawson tweeted this and we all thought it, they're flying a helicopter under a highway overpass.
Right.
There's like a 5-foot clearance on both ends and it's unbelievable.
Even just them slamming each other into the walls in that first mall fight, I remember getting a big reaction in the theater because the hits are so hard and it still works as well as any computer generated effect, and that's just two guys slamming into each other, but the way it's done is so amazing.
How much did this movie cost? Was it $100 million?
It was the first movie to ever cost $100 million.
I don't know how they made that for that much money.
The money is certainly on the screen.
And that happens so rarely anymore, because we have no concept of what CGI costs. And so to see this, you knew going into this movie, this is the most expensive movie ever made. And then you walk out of it like, I get it. I don't have a problem with that. That's money well spent.
Right.
Here's more money.
I saw this movie like 5 times this summer. It came out.
Yeah.
So you did give it more money.
I did. Man.
I thought it was super interesting too.
To go with me.
They have, you know, you always talk about in the heavy action columns, which by the way, if you haven't read the heavy action columns,
thank you, Doug.
Please do so on fthismovie.net.
Thank you.
How Arnold Schwarzenegger is the other, that they cast him so well in these roles that are otherworldly. And I thought it was so interesting that you've got a new robot character and they find another actor who is an other in such a different way, but he's just as weird.
And their solution isn't to go bigger and tougher.
Right, it's not Dolph Lundgren.
Because how can you?
Or, you know, Hulk Hogan playing opposite whatever. It's like not two meatheads.
But that's how technology works. The older model is always bigger and clunkier and not quite speaking the same language.
And because Arnold Schwarzenegger had become such a movie star by the time they made the sequel, there's no way he could play the villain again. And so it's very clever the way that they establish him now as the good guy.
And the fact that they do that leads to that, and people were tweeting about it for minutes. Linda Hamilton's reaction when he comes out of the elevator is just chirps.
Yeah. He'll kill us all.
And it makes her reaction the first time she sees the T-1000 even better, because she's already been chased by a giant future robot, and now he's back, and she's terrified, but okay, come with me if you want to live. And then moments later, she sees the liquid metal, and she's like, what the fuck is that? So great.
It was a type of movie also that I found myself, I couldn't tweet. I wanted to watch it. I've seen it probably 5 times, not as much as you guys here, but I didn't want to tweet through it. I wanted to watch it, and it still holds up. It's 22 years old.
That's crazy.
Oh, my God.
And I feel very old. We are watching a Blu-ray on a really nice screen, so that helps, but it's still like...
My 22-inch. I know, guys.
Around, but it's still, it looks beautiful, and it was just like, I'm blown away by the pacing of it. It doesn't, I mean, James Cameron, say what you will about his writing, which is arguably awful. Like, he's not a good writer, but he knows how to structure and stage and pace and edit something that looks
as
good.
As a writer, he's a great director.
He knows how to make a movie, man.
And I thought it was interesting. You said you it was compelling. You wanted to watch it. And you didn't tweet. I think actually for the day, that's the movie that had the most tweets.
Oh, it did because it had the most people on. Also because I think a lot of people wanted to watch it, but also because unfortunately this was the only movie available on a lot of different platforms, and so people jumped in. And of course we ran into the problem where there were different versions available on different things. So some people were watching the extended director's cut, and we were watching the theatrical cut.
Although
so
I think it worked out okay.
It was okay. Yeah. We were all at different points, but you could still know what people were referencing, especially because we've all seen Terminator 2.
One thing I thought was kind of cool, and this is hard to define, but it kind of provides texture, is a movie back in 91 like Terminator 2, if you're a day player in Terminator 2, they still give you enough breathing room to have kind of a moment or two where you're just like, oh, that's kind of that guy's personality. And like, they don't do that in movies anymore, and it provides so much more stakes and kind of interest in what's happening to this guy who's getting his head thrown into a metal post. You're just like, oh, that's that guy who licks people's faces. It's just like, they don't do that anymore. It's just like, you know, henchman number one, bam. Henchman number two, bam.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, it just is interesting.
Because there's no time for any of that. Nobody pays it. I mean, James Cameron is a good storyteller. He may be a bad writer, but he's a good storyteller.
You know, you talk about your reaction in 1991 and who you were at that time. You wanted to watch this movie 5 times. Who I was in 1991 when I first saw this movie was I was a young mother. I had a year-old child at home. And this movie made me vow to myself. And I, like, as my son grew,
I will kill any robots that come from my son.
Yes! And I would think in my head, I remember, you decided you want to be a mom as good as the mom in Terminator 2. She was willing to
so I started doing tons of push-ups.
And do whatever it took to keep her son safe because her son was important. And
because
like,
Jan has...
I'm kidding, but no, she's been a role model of motherhood for me. Oh,
Jan has expressed to me that our son will save the world.
Yes.
Oh.
So the special attention.
And then also I'm afraid of giant robots from the future.
They eat senior citizens' medicine.
Again, it's so rare for a movie. I think of like even Return of the Jedi, for all its problems, at least when Return of the Jedi came out, it picked up these characters in a place where they didn't leave off in the last movie. That it was like, oh, things have happened between these two movies. And that's what this movie does. And I don't think a lot of sequels do that anymore.
Yeah. Our son has impressed this upon us in terms of screenwriting, that you want to start every scene in the middle, and you want it to end
as soon as you can.
As soon as you can,
right?
Which I think this film takes into account. I wanted to comment on what Adam said because on one of the podcasts we were talking about this. You were talking about how even the smallest part gets a little moment to shine. And Patrick and I were talking about it. The example I always use is when that little tiny box robot in Star Wars wheels down the hallway and sees Chewbacca and sort of gives a mechanical scream and runs away. That's called business. And that makes a movie.
Right.
That so that it's not a non-entity being crushed into the wall. That's, like you said, that's the face licker.
Yeah.
I want to see him punished.
And the opposite
is... He licked her face.
Is face the Star licker Wars. Also the robot in Star Wars.
The opposite is the Star Wars prequels, where it's all business and it becomes noise.
It's not business, it's busy.
Only gripe on Terminator 2 is they mispronounce robots the whole movie.
And there certainly are problems, because again, you see it as an adult instead of 13-year-old, and when you're 13, you don't really care about Edward Furlong because you're that age, and so you're like, that's me, I want a Terminator friend. And now you see it and you're like, oh yeah, okay, he's not great, he's a little bit annoying and doesn't give a great performance. And
if this were today, if this movie were made today, Edward Furlong's character would be lazy as hell, and he'd be texting and tweeting. He's just like, totes in a chase, call you back.
Lol, bye.
Arnold would be constantly trying to engage him, and he would have his cell phone. He'd keep saying, just a minute. Give me a second.
We need to talk. Screw your data plan.
And the whole thing about trying to give him humanity, the machine, okay, and I need a vacation is bad, and I know now why you cry is not great, but I have to admit, I still like the thumbs up at the end. If they could have just left it at that, I think it would have been more meaningful than if they had tagged on 8 versions of that before he gives the thumbs up.
Well, I agree, because the movie earns that moment. We've been through a lot of shit.
And that would have been the one sign that, like, look, he got some humanity right there at the very end, and then you burnt.
A lot of burnts in this.
There was so many burnts. So many broken glass.
Yeah. So much Pepsi.
Yeah, a lot
of Pepsi. We didn't mean for the day to be inspired. Inspired.
Inspired.
Wesley Knipes.
The fact that all the movies are from the same year,
yeah,
you're bound to have a lot of overlap that you don't even really anticipate, just in the style and the little.
But I think it goes deeper than that. When I think back to 1991, I remember broken glass, explosions, and Pepsi.
Because we lived in that burnt-out glass factory with the Pepsi.
Thank goodness you guys moved. Coke is so much better.
Who would grow up to save the world?
It's like broken up pieces of soap.
Anybody have anything else to say about F This Movie Fest?
I look forward to next year.
No.
Me too.
It was probably really fun. I'm already
the movies
about
of
year.
1912! Mary Pickford! Such a fox!
Yeah.
She showed some ankles!
The ghost of Edward Muybridge is joining us on the Twitter!
5 movies, 60 minutes.
How can we tweet ankles? Showing.
Yeah, right. Seriously, thank everybody. Thank you to everybody so much for joining.
Thank everybody.
Thank everybody. Thank you guys so much for participating. It was a ton of fun to get to watch movies with all of our friends that we've never met, and that's what it feels like. And
it's really
so much fun, and I'm really glad that we do this, and I hope we're around next year to do it again. I hope we continue to get bigger and bigger, and next year we'll have even more celebrities.
We love you, Australia. Canada.
Yeah,
we were all over the world today.
Oh, Canada.
Nationwide.
We admire thy tweets.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
At This Movie Fest. At This Movie.
You burnt.